Part 1, 1793. Chapter 1. On days in August when sea storms bite into the North Carolina coast, he drags a tick mattress into the hall and tells his daughter stories, true and false, about her mother. The wooden shutters clatter, and Tabitha folds blankets around them to build a softness for the storm. He always tells of their courting days, of her mother's shyness. She looked like a straight, tall pine from a distance. Only when he got close could he see her trembling.
Was she scared?
Happy, John says. We were both happy.
He watches Tab pull the quilt up to her chin, though even the storm can't blow away the heat of summer. She's waiting to hear his secrets. But it is hard to describe how it feels to stand next to someone you love on the shore at dusk. He didn't have to see Helen to know she was there. Something in her body pulled at something in his across the humid air between them.
When you're older, he says,
and she nods, familiar with this response.
Why don't you ever tell about the ship? She asks. All the things you must have seen with her.
He looks down the hall at the shadows whipping across the slats and holds a finger to his lips.
Can you hear any birds?
Tab slips into the kitchen for an end of bread in the darkness of the storm. She will keep asking him until he tells her. In the quilts again, she tucks close against him. As the wind rattles through the palmettos and the rain melts the window glass, John sings one of his sailing tunes to soothe her. Tabitha calls out, "Louder!" And he rises to his feet, unsteady on the mattress, waving his browned hands to the melody. His voice carries through the quiet rooms. He doesn't tell her about the day he walked Helen onto a ship with a captain he knew from his pirate days. One small bag between them, and they curled beneath the gunwale until the frigate had pulled its anchor and filled its sails and was tacking through the shoals out of the bay. Only when the mate gave a wink did they stand, Helen wobbling, clutching him for support, laughing like a girl, her hair pulled by the wind, and watch the town slowly shrink until it was no bigger than a piece of driftwood, a brown and gold splotch against the shore. He doesn't tell Tab about the beauty of her mother, as she struggled to find some dignity on a vessel made seaworthy by its layers of filth. A year they were on that ship, married, and her with the seed of a child in her by the end, and Helen transformed from some kind of pristine saint to the sunburned woman who tucked her skirts up to scrub the deck with him, who wrapped her hands around his when he fished off the side of the ship in the evenings. Could such a woman really have come back to live in the world again? The curses she learned, the brownness of her skin, the way her laughter got louder, as though to compete with the waves. Who will Tabitha be when she becomes a woman? After the storm, they walk to the shore to see what the ocean has relinquished. Fallen leaves and branches line the way. Half buried in sand is the cracked husk of a horseshoe crab. Tab scrapes her fingernails along its papery hide and leaves it for the waves to eat again. It is 1793, and they live in Beaufort, in a four-room house, two above and two below, built by a childless cousin in the lumber trade who was killed by a falling pine. One block north of the water, three blocks east of the store where John sells sundries. In the summer, the doors hang open, front and back, and a salt breeze snakes through the hall. In thunder, the windows clamor. The girl's room upstairs faces the marsh and smells of fish in the morning, and in the afternoon catches all the southern light. On moonless nights, she sleeps with her father for fear of riding witches. Mrs. Fushi leads the school in town, where children, mostly girls, pass time if their mothers are not birthing or poor. Their small hands rub the grooves in wooden tables and slip between the pages of spelling books. The letters dance for them. Mrs. Fushi is a soldier's wife, and sleeps in his bed and listens to him remember the revolution. But in the schoolroom, she wearies of duty.
For most of the day, she sits and has the children bring their work to her. She lets them out early or fails to call them back for dinner. She idles with her embroidery, sucks on candies, and sometimes dozes. The girls creep to her chair and watch, some fondling the pink brocade of her skirts, others plucking strands of silver hair fallen on her bosom and setting fire to them for the smell of it. Her eyelids droop. Her mouth, still full in middle age, hangs limp. She taught Tab's mother, too.